Outdoor Edge knows that providing a freezer full of meat is part of the reason we all hunt. And what better way to bring it full circle than to process your own wild game? Outdoor Edge provides a full lineup of traditional and replaceable blade hunting knives and complete wild game processing kits to bring your wild game from the field to the freezer. Visit OutdoorEdge.com and at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30 for 30% off.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, your home for all things outdoors in the Badger State. I'm your host, Josh Raley, and today I am talking with my dad. When I was back home on vacation, went down to Alabama, got to catch up with my dad and talk a bit about his experience growing up in northern Michigan and hunting in the UP. He grew up with a strong deer camp culture, very similar to here in Wisconsin, and that's something that I really missed out on as a kid growing up down in Alabama. The hunting club culture is a lot different in the South than it is here in Wisconsin or in states like Michigan and Pennsylvania that just have these really, really rich, deep deer camp traditions. And so it was cool to just sit down with him, hear some stories about deer that they killed, shenanigans that they pulled, pranks that they pulled on each other, and just good times, and hear all the special memories that he has of a camp called Jones Camp in the UP of Michigan. Hunting was very, very different then than it is now for many people. You know, the hunting media and other things have contributed and created this idea now that hunting is a very solo sport, right? Like it's something that we do all on our own, and the whole point of hunting is to go and be by ourselves and us against the animal. And it was a very different vibe that I'm getting from these stories that my dad was telling me. And you know, it's much more about the camaraderie, much more about the friends that were made, a bunch more about just setting aside that special time every year when you got to share camp with these people. And so had a great conversation catching up with him. So this is actually a two-part conversation that we had. We ended up talking for like 3 hours or something like that. It's the first podcast my dad had ever done. And, you know, I think it surprised him just how quickly the whole thing kind of flew by as we started sharing stories and even reminiscing a bit about my childhood and getting out in the woods in South Alabama and hunting together. And so so we broke this episode down into two. This is going to be part one. Want to let you know about a couple things. Number one, if you would like to support us as a podcast, you can head over to our Patreon page and support us there. There are a couple of different tiers. Each tier has some different benefits that you receive as a patron of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. So if you would like to give back to this podcast, then please do. Also, want to let you know that this podcast episode is brought to you by Overwatch Outdoors, makers of the Transformer and the Orion Tree Saddle. Now, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that I've been hunting out of a saddle for a couple of years now, made the switch this year to the Orion Tree Saddle. It is by far the most comfortable thing I've ever sat in. The Transformer is a really cool saddle, too. But just turns out I'm a single panel kind of guy. I prefer the one piece of material rather than two different pieces. So anyway, both of the saddles are fantastic. If you're wondering which one might be right for you, head over to overwatchoutdoors.net, or you can reach out to Jamie, the owner of the company, and he'll get you squared away. With all that stuff out of the way, let's get into the episode now with my dad, Brian Sutton. All right, joining me for this week's episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast is my dad, Brian. What's going on?
How you doing, Josh?
I'm doing well. We're down here for vacation. We took 9 or 10 days or so to come down to Alabama and hang out with family. Spent the first part of the vacation time that we had up in North Alabama with my wife's family. Spent the second half of it down here with you and mom, and hopefully going to get to see some other family tomorrow down here in deep South Alabama.
Yeah, we're going to do a barbecue.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty good. I'm excited for it. So kicking things off here, you know, this is going to be a BS session, kind of a classic. We're just sitting around hanging out, having a conversation. But I do want to just say, let's kick it off. Who are you? What do you do? How'd you get into hunting and fishing? How did you instill a passion for hunting and fishing in your kid so that now he does crazy stuff like record podcasts?
So I'm Brian Sutton. I grew up in northern Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula, the east end of it. And my dad, he hunted for all my life and well before, and he introduced me to hunting. I moved to Alabama about 1997, met your mother shortly after that and moved to Mobile because she wasn't moving up north, and north meant Huntsville, Alabama. she is true Southern.
Yeah, that should tell the listeners just a little bit about where we actually are in Alabama, if Huntsville, Alabama is up north.
Yeah, we're down near Mobile, a little bit north in Mobile County, just kind of in the woods, and that's where we hang out. We hang out in the woods. We try not to go to the city too much.
I don't think I haven't been to the city since I've been here.
Stay away from the city. It'll make you soft.
It'll make you soft. Yeah, we've had a good time. I even tried to chase some turkeys around. I'm not positive that there is a single turkey within a mile of your property.
No, I never see turkeys. I mean, I do see turkeys some seasons, a field to fill up with them. And I've never really seen I've seen some jakes. I've never seen a full gobbler.
Never seen a tom, so.
But I'm not a big turkey hunter, as you know. I'm more of deer and I like to fish but somebody told me a long time ago in Thomasville, Alabama, that if I got into turkey hunting, I would never go back and I would be too hooked on it. And I'm afraid to tell your mother I'm hooked on another hobby.
It's probably for the best. I tell you, I got hooked on it pretty bad. I mean, it's, you know, turkey hunting is a little bit different where I'm at now up in Wisconsin. But it's been quite a pastime. But so how did you get into hunting in general? So your dad hunted while you were growing up. What all did he hunt for?
He was he did small game, but he and partridge, and rabbit. And so, when I was about probably 9 or 10, you had to be in Michigan. The law was you had to be 12 years old before you get a hunter's safety. And so I was every bit 12. Took hunter's safety. Went hunting. It was small game hunting. It was rabbits. It was partridge. And my dad took me with him the first deer season after I was 12. And I had a small game permit. And I got to go kind of just sit with him in the woods. And we went to a hunting camp that in the north, that Upper Peninsula, Fiber, Michigan. We got a hat somewhere here.
Jones Camp,
established, I think, 1955, something like that, right?
Yep, yep.
It's behind me. You can see it better than I can, I think.
I can't even see it. It's hanging up. We're sitting here to paint the picture for you guys. We're sitting here in a room surrounded by weapons, deer heads, and hats on the wall, and fish. So we are in the man room of the house, is what we call it.
Yes, yes, where I watch sports and have all my hunting stuff.
So there's a hat in here somewhere that says Jones Camp with the establishment date on there, but we can't find it.
No, I hope I didn't lose it. It's the last one I know available. But anyway, we went to that camp, and we stayed in Sault Ste. Marie with my grandparents. And drove in every morning. And the next year, kids were not allowed at that camp. It was a family friend camp. And I'll explain that at some point. But I got invited to stay on the weekend. And I remember my dad telling me that it was really special that no kid has ever, one kid was invited one time. And he walking around and he found a bear that was wounded, and he went tracking the bear. And Charlie Jones, Jones Camp, and Charlie Jones was the owner of the camp, and he got so mad that he never invited that kid back. He had to make him leave.
Wow, because he had followed a wounded bear.
Followed a wounded bear. It was, you know, they put him on a stand, and they said, you stay here and don't go wandering off and find out. It was tracking a blood trail of a wounded bear. That upset Charlie a great deal, just the dangerousness of it. And so I was invited to stay. He took a liking to me. He was an older gentleman. I say that he's probably not much older than I am right now.
he felt old at the time, but now that you look back.
But he probably wasn't as old, but especially now that I'm about that age, you know, grandparent. But anyway, so my dad would take me, and he had to be 14 to hunt deer in Michigan legally. And now that the statute of limitation is over, my dad used to give me a slug in my shotgun. And I'd put it in there, and he says, if you see a game warden, he said, take it back out and just put birdshot in it. You'll be okay. I was a rambunctious little child, and I didn't sit still long enough to be able to see a deer in the woods anyway. And yeah, it was cold. I froze to death.
So let's go into that camp experience just a little bit. So Jones Camp was a family friend camp.
Well, Charlie Jones had 40 acres in the middle of, and his brother Bob had 40 acres in the middle of state land off of this old road they called the Biscuit Road in Fiber, Michigan.
So we're talking big woods, just monotonous timber kind of stuff, or?
Hundreds of thousands of acres, yeah. State land, state and federal land. Yeah. And, but they had this little, off this little dirt, what we would call down here a little two-track road or din road up down here, but up north they call it a two-track. And it made a big loop. Back in the Depression age, they had a group called the CC camps, where men would go and work in the CC camps and build all these roads and fire roads and stuff in the forest. And Bob and Charlie both lived in that area and joined the CC camps out there and built a lot of those firebreak roads and all these two tracks and stuff like that. That was part of how they survived through the Depression. The government sponsored these roads. And anyway, so he owned the land. His son was about my dad's age. And his friends, my dad was one of them, and about five, six, seven other guys, they all came out to that camp. And outhouse in the back, no running water, a little spring outside to pump water into. And it was about a two-room camp. And later, fortunately, they had indoor plumbing because I got to use an outhouse. It wasn't as fun as it sounds. And so anyway, we got invited there, and the camp is very a bunch of friends get together. They donate a little bit of money into a coffee cup to help pay some of the bills. And you know, back then, maybe in the 70s, you'd pay $100-$200 just to help pay for fuel oil and some food and stuff. And there was an older gentleman there. He was a cook on tugboats, and he didn't hunt much. He just liked to come up and cook. So he had really good food, and it was just a bunch of characters. And they all got along, and they played cards at night. I mean, they joked around with me, and I played poker with them. I was 13, 14 years old playing poker, and they used to tease because I'd go running into the other room. I'd have a good hand. I'd be out of money. I'd say, Dad, Dad, I need some money. I need some money. he'd just go get it in my wallet. But I used to lose a lot of nickels, dimes, and quarters from them. I'd save all year long for that. But it was really good times, and the other camps would come visit, and we very seldom went to other camps, but they'd come to us and visit, play cards. All about my dad's age and all friends of his. And it was just a unique experience. They played a lot of jokes on me. I was about 13, 14 years old, and they'd get to talk, and they'd say, oh, yeah, the neighbors, they have that granddaughter of Mr. Fountain. She was up walking around the road, you know, 13, 14, a girl. And I'd downplay it. Pretty soon I'd grab a shotgun or a rifle, and I'm going to take a walk up this way for a little while. I'd be waiting to see that girl, but they probably back in the cabin just laughing as loud as they could be. They sent me one time down the road after we were playing cards. It was after dark. And after dinner, I had to wash dishes every night, and that was my job, which was fine with me. But they sent me down the road, and they said, a guy had pulled in. He said, I saw a deer just up the road. Oh, Brian, go get a gun and take that flashlight and go see if you see that deer. Well, somebody put some eyeballs out there as reflectors, and I walked up and walked around the corner. I didn't see anything. I flashed the light. I didn't see anything. And I came back. I didn't hear you shoot. How come you didn't shoot? I said, I didn't see anything. Come on, you got to go a little further. I go up. I didn't. And I guess they figured I didn't fall for it. But in truth, the reality was I was scared of the dark. I figured a coyote or something would come get me, and
hadn't gone very far, huh?
I didn't stray too far away. They would play all kinds of things like that. But it was a good time. You got to hunt anywhere you want. Thousands of acres of land.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about that, where you guys were located. So. It was a 40-acre piece of property, but everything around you was open hunting.
Never hunted that property ever.
Always off the 40.
Charlie showed me how to, I didn't even know where the boundaries were. Charlie showed me where how to snare a rabbit on his property. But it wouldn't have mattered to me if it was his other land, because I didn't even know where the 40 acres began and ended. Which direction it went, it just didn't matter. It was just woods all around. You had a few neighbors before you got to his cabin. And you walked down this, we called it the Biscuit Road. And it went, I think, 7 or 9 miles through till it hit a paved road, from one paved road to another paved road. And all of it was federal and state land, open to hunting. And you could go anywhere off of that road at any time and hunt anywhere. It was really phenomenal, if you think about it. And it's still like that today. I mean, there's a couple more places, from what I understand. I talked to a few people up there recently, but it's still that way. It's just state and federal land. It's not ever going to get sold. You can go hunt. And there was times that I've hunted off some roads where 12 miles long, and I only knew of one other guy hunting it. Wow. You know, it was, and that's where I got my beginning.
Lots of room to yourself. I mean, I imagine, you know, as an adult, you look at that and you're like, man, this is hundreds of thousands of acres. This is a lot of land. Yeah. But as a kid, you might as well have been in a different country when you were there. I mean, that had to feel like the Yukon wilderness.
A little bit, but I grew up, I grew up in the area. And to me, city was the wilderness. Mm. Right? Towns and cities. To me, out in the country, should be land that you should go to.
Yeah.
And, a little bit different than how you grew up.
Yep.
Right? Where you get on somebody's land, or you walk up and land, and somebody will tell you, hey, you're on my land. What are you doing?
Yep.
Get off. And so it was a little bit normal. And as I got older, 14, 15, they began to trust me. They would tell me how to go from the Biscuit Road to the railroad tracks, following the ridges and never really hit the swamp. Hmm. The swales, they call them swales. and never really get my feet wet. Now, I jumped a lot of deer doing that, and I didn't get a shot at any of them. But I actually made it from the road to the railroad tracks, exhausted and tired. But and then I end up, you know, 3-4 miles up the railroad tracks, have to walk back down. I hunted the railroad tracks. Statute of limitations are over on that. It was. I wasn't the only one doing it, and it was good time. My favorite hunts were on a hard snow. We'd get 6, 7, 8 inches of snow, and it turned sunny the next day, and the deer would come crossing that railroad tracks headed south to the deer yards. That's what they would say. They're heading south and probably headed to the deer yards, and you know, we'd see a deer all the time crossing there.
Wow.
Way back in the day when my dad, he said on a good full moon night, he was done playing cards. He took a snowmobile a few miles up there and sat, and he said, all the deer crossed, but they were way up the road, way up the tracks.
And by the way, we don't condone illegal hunting behavior at this point.
Oh, no.
We're talking in a different era, a different world, totally different mindset about hunting and the way all of that was.
Statute of limitations run off, and I wouldn't do it today.
That's right. It's all in the past. So far, we've talked underage hunting. We've talked hunting in illegal areas. We've talked hunting at night. So, yeah, we're building quite a reputation.
We are, but, you know, we follow the law now. I mean, and for the most part, we did back then.
Sure, yeah.
You know, we didn't... never go spotlighting and kill a deer. Never go shining. I got a light right out here in the backyard, and we watched the deer. Probably see deer out there this evening, and we won't. We never even think about shooting them.
Well, you never have.
Well, you like to contemplate it. But
especially that one night we were sitting here, and the big buck came out in the backyard. That was painful.
I think your wife gave you good counsel that night.
Yeah, that was very, very painful. And yes. It wasn't very long after sunset.
No, it wasn't.
It was close enough.
It was a nice deer, wasn't it?
It was a very nice deer. You never did see that one again, did you?
No.
Wasn't he a big 7?
Yeah, I think it was.
And for South Alabama, he was a...
He would have been one that would have hung on the wall.
Yeah, he's a good deer. So when you guys would go up to Jones Camp, we're talking rifle season? Or general firearm season?
Yeah, we would go. Well, so we would go up there on the weekends, and I had a little dog, and we had some cabins south of Mackinac City, and we took this dog that I found. He was mostly a mutt. His name was Nicholas, but he had a little bird dog in him, and a little beagle in him, and a little some sort of shepherd in him, and we took him. My dad said, "Let's take him bird hunting." And we walked the woods all by that cabin on this little lake, and across the road, we walked this whole area. Never jumped a bird. And he said, "Tomorrow we'll take him up to Fiber. We'll take him up to the hunting camp." I said, "Dad." I said, "That dog didn't do anything but walk around with us." He said, "I suspect something." He said, "You'll see." So we got into the woods, and all of a sudden he started flushing partridge.
Wow.
And he got good at it. And he never pointed for long, but if you watched him and you knew what he was going to do, you had about 3 or 4 seconds to be able to prepare, and he was going to pounce.
So you just had to keep up.
You just had to keep an eye on him, but he stayed good at staying within 10, 15 feet of you. Just, he was there working in front of you, and all of a sudden he'd get excited and start sniffing, and he'd stop for a second and flush. And,
wow.
He did real good. I remember one time we were out sighting in the rifles at the cabin, getting ready for deer season, doing a little work around there. And that dog ran off somewhere. We heard some high squeal pitch. What is that? And I said, I reckon that dog is he out there somewhere chasing on a rabbit. And he come back with the rabbit.
Oh, my goodness.
In his mouth. That was pretty good. Man. And the squeal we heard was the rabbit.
Oh, no.
But he was a good dog, and so I hunted with him, bird hunted up there. you know, when I got 16, 17 years old, and I didn't have to go wait on my dad to be ready to go off work, and I could just go up there and I take that dog, and we go everywhere and bird hunt. When I got lazy, and you'd see partridge on the road, and you'd stop and you get up and maybe want to shoot it or something. I'd have a .22 or something with me, and that dog, he would go crazy. Mm. He would go crazy wanting to get out of that car, and when I did start to, I did go start getting the hunting stand ready. You know, take apples and start getting the deer. It was legal, still is in Michigan, I believe. And he'd go in the woods with me, and he'd jump partridge, and believe it or not, he'd get so mad at me. He'd just look at me and say, "Why didn't you shoot? Why didn't you shoot?" You just see the words coming out of him. He loved that gun. He loved the action.
Wanted to be in on the shot.
Oh my goodness, that dog loved to be on the shot. And Josh, I told you Charlie was, he grew up in that area. He grew up in the poor area. When he hunted for food, him and his brothers, they were poor. They lived up in the woods. They had only so much ammunition, and they had to make every shot count. And he knew those woods so well. I started hunting a road probably 20-minute drive from the camp down the paved road, 55 mile an hour, 20 minutes. And it's a 12-mile-long road. And he was telling me a spot up there. It was an old stagecoach road. And he said, you walk up there, he said, you'll see a stagecoach station, you know, the regular way they would stop with the stagecoach. Mm. And there's a well in the ground. And I was determined one year to find it. I was walking up the road, and I saw some deer cross. They see so few human beings in that area that they didn't bother with me. I was right in the middle of the road. They were 50 yards in front of me.
Wow.
They just made their way across, and they looked at me and kept on going, never broke stride. They stop and get follow one another back into the woods. But I found that station. I found the well. And it's just amazing to me how all that stayed, and the trails are still there.
Yeah.
And even see the ruts in the road.
Wow.
And it's amazing. And living down in Alabama, you have a road. We have a road through the swamp here up to the next ridge. And if I don't tend to that every 3 years, you won't see it in 5.
Yep.
It'll be growed over.
Yep.
And so things just stay natural for so much longer.
Yeah.
It's fun to hunt a deer that has never seen a person.
Yeah, so it's really, really remote, first of all. Second of all, as you've described it, there just aren't a lot of deer up there. And there still aren't, even today. Aren't a lot of deer. And one thing I think that's really important to note is that, you know, in Wisconsin, the deer hunting culture has always been, all right, everybody head north up to the some national forest land that they have up there. Huge, vast, expansive woods. Back in the time period that you're talking about was the heyday of hunting in northern Wisconsin. That was when they had a combination of factors all came together to create really good deer populations in northern Wisconsin. Clear cutting was going on. Wolves had been basically removed from the landscape. Several mild winters back to back to back to back. So all of that combined to create this boom in hunting in the north. And as I've talked with folks, you know, biologists and stuff with the DNR in Wisconsin, they talk about how that is very much not the norm for that region. It's not normal to have high deer densities that far north. What would be more normal for woods like that would be like what you grew up with, hunting in the UP of Michigan. So I think the statistics were back when I looked it up, when you used to tell me stories about hunting up there when I was a kid. And I remember looking it up and seeing the area where we are down here in Alabama had like 35 deer per square mile. And we didn't always see a ton of deer growing up here, right? Or I didn't growing up here. Up there, it was like 6 or 8 deer per square mile.
That's right.
And that was probably a generous estimate.
That's right.
So what was it like hunting deer in a place with very few of them?
Cold.
When did y'all start hunting?
Well,
as far as like time of year.
Gun season opens up, and I only hunted gun season. Michigan, like Wisconsin, has a very short season compared to what we do in Alabama. But November 15th, it started.
Okay.
November 30th, it was over.
Wow.
So come December 1st, you had to be out of the woods, no more hunting.
Wow.
And
so you had 2 weeks to get it done.
2 weeks.
Of the year.
15 days. And that was it. And my entire life of hunting in Michigan was I was going to school or college or working entry-level jobs that I only had, you know, 2-3 days off at a time ever hunting. I never took a week off. I didn't even know what vacation was.
Definitely didn't take a rutcation like guys are doing these days.
No. Oh, my goodness, no. And so I would get, I don't know, the first, you know, I'd probably get 6 days of hunting total in a season.
Wow.
And if I saw, and I had a very good personal, I think it was just personal luck, I had a very good buck to doe ratio. I saw very few does, and mostly I saw bucks. I think that was just personal luck. Hmm. A lot of people, you know, what the fellas did, either hunted on a very good trail or a where you knew they were crossing roads or the railroad tracks that we described. And the railroad company, they knew that people were there. In fact, some railroad workers actually hunted just up from. They had regular stands, hunted it. So it wasn't, you know, we say, well, we wouldn't do it today. No, we wouldn't. And the railroad company wouldn't want you to. But back then it was a known thing.
Yeah.
And so it when the train come through, now that was a little scary because the train's coming, you're eye level with the tracks, and that old train rocks back and forth, and it was a little little nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
But you either did that or you got a bunch of food for the deer and brought them to you. And deer will come to food, as we all know. We do the same thing in the South where we plant patches.
Mm-hmm.
And lately, Alabama has allowed putting out corn.
Yep.
Everybody put out corn before.
Yep.
They just got tickets for it if they were unlucky. And if you didn't put out corn, you know, your neighbors were going to see more deer.
Yeah.
And so that's a truth to it. Now, you and I were in some hunting clubs down here where corn was forbidden, and that was okay. And we saw some deer, but not in large volumes, but at least more than I would see in Michigan.
Yeah.
So if I saw 2 deer, 3, 4, or 5 deer in a season, I did well.
Wow.
I killed a couple nice deer up there, and have some real memorable hunts, and but I missed a pile of deer, Josh, when I was young.
Mm.
Oh my goodness, I missed a pile of deer. I almost shot a bucket of bullets at deer, and the old fellas, they'd get I drug old Charlie Jones. They said if you shoot one in the lungs, it'll be real dark blood. Real dark. I think it's supposed to be pink, but knowing what I know now, right?
Yep.
But
yep.
It'll be dark. Mm. Okay. Well, I shot at a deer. It come out. I went up. I looked. And I said, oh, that's dark. So I went all the way to the camp. I'm talking, I'm 3 or 4 miles up a track. I go all the way. I'm almost running back to camp. Come on, Charlie. He's 65, 67 years old. Okay, I'm coming. Drag that poor man all the way up the tracks. He looks down. He says, that's where you shot? I said, yeah. He said, "That's mud." I tell that little bit of embarrassing story to tell this story that I went and when I killed my first buck, it was a big deer. And you're looking at it up in the wall now. It's got 1983 on it.
Yep.
And
really nice deer.
And that deer, we'll get into the weight of that deer in a little bit, but I ran, and I was 3 or 4 miles from the camp, and I ran every bit of that there. I was so exhausted when I busted through the door of the camp, and John and Charlie are sitting at the table preparing dinner. Charlie's peeling potatoes, and I said, I shot a deer, and it's dead. I touched it, and I sat back down. Charlie got up, and he got a knife, and he says, "I don't know, John." He says, "I think we need to just sit here and peel some potatoes." Said, "That boy, he brought me all the way up them railroad tracks. Remember that a couple of years ago?" And they went back and forth for a while, and I said, "Never mind, I'll go figure out how to do it myself." I said, "Settle down, I'm going with you." And so we went, took the truck, my dad's truck, partway up as far as we could on the road, and then walked all the way in. It was probably about a mile and a half, maybe 2 miles back in there. And sure enough, I showed him that deer, and Charlie was probably 70 at that time, my late 60s, so probably 70. And I didn't realize the size of the deer. I didn't appreciate it at that moment. Mm. And he said, "Well, you get it up over here off this knoll. Let's turn it over and we get it on this knoll." And he showed me how to gut it out. And so I gutted it. And then he said, he's looking for a stick, and he had rope. And he said, "Okay." He said, "We're going to pull. And you're going to get in on this stick, and the rope's tied to the horns." And there was not much snow. And there was a nice trail, but there was not much snow. And he and I pulled that deer all that way out. And we hung that deer on the buck pole. And we cleaned it out good. It was a little warm. I drove a 1972 Pinto.
I don't even know what that is.
It was a 74 Pinto. Maybe they didn't make it in 72. I don't remember.
I'm going to have to Google.
Something
Pinto. I'm going to have to Google what a Pinto is.
And they're the ones that caught on fire if you got hit in the rear end.
Oh, God.
And it was completely rusted out. And we were going to put that deer on the top. And somebody said, "No, that might crush that poor car."
Oh, no.
So we slid that deer inside that car. And I took it back home, and I took it to the processor.
You got it. I just Googled a Pinto. You got it inside of that?
We did.
Okay.
The head was right up in the dashboard, and the butt was at the hatch. And I took it across the Mackinac Bridge. I don't even know if they counted it as one of the deer, but it was sitting right next to me when I paid the toll. And so I took that deer in. I hung it in the rafters. And my parents would not be happy about this, but hung it in the rafters in their garage. I don't know where my parents were. My dad might have been at the hunting camp, and my mother probably was in Green Bay, Wisconsin. She went with her friend every year around Thanksgiving, and so I had some people over, and you know, I think I was 18. I had some people over, drinking age is 21. Yeah, I violated that too.
Man, we were breaking so many laws on this episode. My goodness.
I apologize. It's statute of limitations, right?
It's all
right. I don't condone that, young people.
That's right. Don't drink until you're 21, then do so responsibly.
Better to almost be a teetotaler at this point. However, so I had people over. I took them down. I showed them that deer. The next morning, I had to take it to the processor. And it was bad ice storm. It was real icy and slippery. I put that deer in the car, and I get out at the processor, and I walk in, and there's 4 guys talking to the processors there, and there's this really nice, it was probably about an 11, 12-point deer. Nice horns, and the guy's telling the story, and I just listened to his story. It was a good story. I don't remember it now, but it was a good story. He was telling how that deer came out. He was excited. And so I'm standing there, and the processor guy, he was the dad of a female friend of mine. He looked at me, his gruff fella. "What can I do for you?" I said, "Well, I have a deer. What do I do? Do I just bring it in?" Yeah, go get it. "Do you need help?" I said, "Nah, I got it. No problem." So I open up the Pinto, and I get the belt, and I drug it out onto the ice, and I slide that deer in. And remember, as I'm coming in the door, this guy's starting to tell his story again. And I'm dragging this deer across the pavement. It's getting heavier. And pretty soon, I looked at the people, and they're listening to the story, and one of them looked at my way, and then he started staring. And then the other one kind of looked. Pretty soon, everybody's looking at me, but the guy's telling his story. And he finally looked, and nobody was paying attention to him, and he looked around, and he looked at the deer that I was dragging in. He just shut up, and he left. And this thing dressed out, I don't know how heavy it was. It had to be 325-pound deer. Not dressed out, but it had to be. When I hung it in the rafters in the garage, I couldn't get the butt off the floor.
Wow.
8-foot rafters, the butt was dragging the floor. I couldn't even come close to getting it off the floor.
Yeah.
And that other guy's deer was half the size.
Wow.
And his horns could have fit inside the horns of this one. I didn't appreciate it because the deer on the buck pole next to it were just as big.
Yeah.
And so that was my first taste of deer hunting. When I killed one a couple of years later, the next year, I went in, I got so much deer meat off of that deer. I was box after box after box. I drug to the car. The next year I brought in the same processor. It was like a spike. I brought it in. I go to get the meat and I said, "Where's the rest of it?" That gruff old fella didn't like me anyway. He's like, "What do you mean? I didn't take any meat of you. That's all of it right there."
Oh my goodness. So I thought you were getting after him a little bit.
I didn't know any better.
Yeah.
I had box after box after box of the first one. I don't get but 1.5 boxes out of this one.
Was that a typical, like, I mean, obviously that the deer's body was huge. Was that typical for where you guys were hunting in that part of Michigan to have huge body size?
The amazing thing is there were 3 deer taken off of that one stand. One was a large spike, probably 16 inches long.
Okay.
Big, fat horns.
So mature deer, just a spike.
He was maybe the biggest one.
Biggest body?
Yeah.
And really?
The other was, I think, maybe a 10-point with a similar body.
Okay.
But I hadn't seen any other deer about that size since.
Interesting.
And any deer I've killed that 11-point there, but it was 12 miles up the road or 20-minute drive and 12 miles down that dirt road. He was average. I mean, he was a average Michigan deer. You'd see maybe in Wisconsin or northern Wisconsin. I know you got bigger deer. Southern part of the state has more deer and bigger bodies because they're corn fed and get the fields like where you live in Wisconsin.
Sure.
But just didn't have that. I don't know what they were on. They were some healthy deer that year. And it could have been that we had a couple of real easy winters.
Yeah.
Where there was food available. And so I suspect that had a lot to do with it, maybe a couple mild winters.
Mm. Tell me about the stand you killed that deer from then. So
the first one?
Yeah, you said you killed 3 from it? Or there were 3 deer killed
there
from
it? There were 3, yeah. It was one of my dad's friends, Leroy Bumstead's stand that he made.
So what are you hunting from? I gotta hear this. These days I'm hunting with ultralight climbing sticks and a tree saddle with some ropes that go around the tree. I can get in any tree, anywhere, anytime, hang upside down from it, and it all weighs about 10 pounds. You were hunting in something a little different.
Oh yeah. We didn't even dream of climbing a tree. I mean, I don't even think it was legal to climb a tree.
Yeah.
And if I had friends that did it, they used to just climb a tree and sit on a limb.
Oh yeah.
And no, we had a lot of spruce trees, a lot of pines, and he cut out the bottom of this pine, and the limbs all came around it, and there was a nice opening in it. He had a nice seat brought in there, and some boards to kind of put stuff on, and it was mostly natural cover.
Yeah.
And I shot that first deer. That deer, a second time I shot at a deer, he took me back there one year, and I couldn't sit still long enough, and one came out and surprised me, and I missed it. I shot probably 3 feet over its head. And similar type deer. It was about an 8-point.
Wow.
And but at this one here, I don't think it was 25 yards away. Came right out. It was a windy
this day. One you shot?
Yeah.
At 25 yards. Yeah. So, wow, okay.
And then I shot it 3 times in the head because it wasn't getting away from me.
Oh,
it had so much blubber on it, Josh. Every time I kicked it, it moved because it was blubber.
Oh, my goodness. So you shoot it again.
It was a fat deer. I said, there's no way this deer is getting away from me.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And so, yeah. And we... But Leroy had killed the other two in there. And it was a phenomenal season at his stand. And
yeah.
His son hunted up a little north of him, and his son was more of a modern-type hunter where he would pass on the younger deer. I just killed anything that came out that was legal. And just because and you know me, even after... You came along and we were hunting together. I'd still kill some deer.
Sure, yeah.
And now I'm not so mad at them. I watch them more than I shoot.
Well, you never really, since I've known you, you've not been like a spike killer.
No.
Or anything like that. It's been 2-year-old deer or older.
Try to.
Typically. Yeah. I mean, you're not shooting yearlings out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, a nice 2-year-old basket rack, 7 or 8 walks out.
Yeah.
Not going to let that go.
Couldn't stand to pass on that.
Uh-uh. Yeah. Well, and it's a little bit different too. You know, in down here in Alabama, you get $3. And when I was a kid, remember, we got 2 deer a day.
Yeah.
One of which could be an antlered buck.
That's right.
You could kill for the entire season. I don't know how many days it was, but it used to start on October 15th. Right?
Bow season
started October 15th. Gun season would usually start around November 20th.
That's right.
Right?
The weekend before Thanksgiving.
Weekend before Thanksgiving. And then when I was a kid, it would run through January 31st.
That's right.
And so you could, I don't know how many deer that is, but you could kill 2 deer a day.
But only 1 buck a day.
But only 1 buck a day. What a limit, right? Like you only get to shoot 1 buck every day. So
that's right.
A 2-year-old walks out, there's not a lot of incentive to pass that 2-year-old on a 5,000-acre hunting camp property.
No.
Where everybody else is saying, hey, he's got 4 points. Yep. He meets the criteria for the club.
So
he's
going down. 4 points are better.
Yep. And that's both sides, not 4 points on one.
That's right.
Four points on both sides.
That's right. In Alabama, they count all of them.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a 2-point side, basically. Yeah. So, yeah, but you've never been a spike killer, but you were very opportunistic up there in Michigan.
Very.
Anything that comes out.
And, but in reality, if I didn't kill that spike, and 1.5-year-old deer, and it had decent little horns, that might be the only deer I saw.
Yeah.
In that hunting time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the little one that's by the one that I killed first. That's one of my most memorable hunts. Is that it had snowed probably about a foot of snow the night before. We drove in it. Actually, we were out camp jumping, going visiting camps, and my buddy and I, and we were out till 2 or 3 in the morning. And we get in, and he gets up in the morning and wakes me up. Go hunting. He's just giving me a hard time. I got up just to go get rid of him. I was going to go take a nap in the woods. And,
probably warmer places to nap at, but
warmer, yeah. But you have a little fire. We have little heaters up there. My dad take a little can of coffee can, those metal coffee cans back in the day, and you take a roll of toilet paper and you squeeze it into there, and then the old farmers used to use an alcohol-based antifreeze in their tractors. That's what my dad said anyway. But you could buy it at the auto parts store. And so I'd go buy a bunch of gallons of that, and I'd pour it onto the toilet paper, and you light a match, and you have a nice little fire. It makes a good heater and doesn't smoke.
Burns for a long time.
Burns a good while. They used to use charcoal. That just made smoke and smell, and it was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we went with the cleaner version. Almost lit myself on fire a few times trying to stay warm.
Well, and now thinking about it, who knows what kind of fumes you were inhaling?
Like, who knows?
You didn't have the charcoal smoke, but you had whatever carcinogens were flying up out of that little.
It might be why Miss Helen, your mother, questions me sometimes what I'm thinking.
Killed a few too many brain cells with that your makeshift heater, but yeah. So anyway, so you're going out, you're gonna warm up, you're gonna take a little nap wherever it is away from your buddy.
And I had an old 30-30 Marlin that my dad killed the deer with years earlier when he had it. It was that gun has a lot of history, and I got to get you or your brother to kill a deer with it, and then I got to get the grandkids to kill a deer with it, and it'll have had a lot of generations of deer killing.
Yep.
And I took it with me, and I was shaking snow off every tree limb, because if you walked under it, the vibration just have it fall on you anyway. I got to my stand, and it was all covered in snow, and I lit the fire, and the gun was inside, and I sat on an old car seat in there. And got my head stuck in there, and I'm trying to clear it out with snow, and I look out the opening, There's a buck staring at me. And it was an 8-point, smaller 8-point. And it was just pretty standing there. It couldn't be 50 yards away. And I was like, okay, if I lean over to shoot that deer, my butt's sticking out of the blind. If I lean over to shoot that deer, I'm going to light myself on fire. So I had his old rubber boots with big foam insulation, not felt insulation in them, you know, felt insulated rubber boots. And I used to just step on the fire, but it was freshly lit and still had, you know, I always filled that thing to the brim to get the alcohol, most fire you can get at the first, right, to warm it up.
Yep.
I tried to step on it with my boot and go, tsh, make a little noise, but I couldn't get the fire out, and I was like, this is getting crazy. I finally got the fire out, and I look, and that deer is still there. And so I grabbed the rifle, and I was leaning over, and I shot, and that deer disappeared. All snow between me, every bit of snow on every limb between me and that deer just come, shoo, white out conditions.
Mm.
And so when it all settled down, I walked up there. I think it was standing here, and I couldn't see it. Couldn't see blood. I was off to the side a little bit, and I finally got to where that deer was standing, full of pink blood because it went through the lungs, you know. Nice pink shade of blood.
Not dark pink blood.
Not dark blood. And I went in, and I tracked it, I don't know, about 75 yards. It was laying down. And so I said, well, ordinarily I would gut this deer out and drag it out of the woods, throw it in the truck, and go back. That morning, I just turned around and went back to the camp, and I got my buddy up because he just went back to bed.
a little payback for him.
And I said, hey, come on, I need help dragging this deer out. So I made him come with me. I did it on purpose. I could have got that little deer out, but it was that's very memorable. My last deer hunt in Michigan was a evening just like that, where it was so pretty in the trees, and I knew I was moving to Alabama in the early winter, and I wondered if it would be my last deer hunt in fiber, And to date, it has been. I always reminisce about it, and I'd like to take a trip, but it's just the my dad's friends either don't hunt anymore, or they've all passed away.
Yeah,
and it's just, I was fortunate enough to hunt with my dad down here. You and I hunted with him a couple of times.
Yep,
but it just wouldn't be the same. But I almost want to go for partridge season one last time. I don't know. But there's so many other things to do. And I don't know if I'll ever get there. And it's such a long ways to go.
Yeah. It's what, a 21 hours. 21 hours?
Yeah, from here up there to my parents' house. And we drove it many a times, had to go to the funerals and all that. Miss Helen, your mother, and I, we made that drive. I remember one time driving up there, and we left you with your aunt, you and your brother, and we get up to the Michigan state line, and I turn over the radio, and I hear a Detroit, about 7 o'clock at night, I hear the Detroit Red Wings coming on. I looked over at your mother, and I said, we'll make it all the way home. She said, why? I said, because there's a hockey game on and I can listen to it and I'll stay awake the rest of the trip. drove about 3 or 4 more minutes and she said, if you don't get me out of this car soon, I'm just going to jump out the door. I'm like, oh, we'll stop at the next exit and get a hotel. I was going to watch the game. I was asleep in 15 minutes.
Man.
We were exhausted.
Yeah, you guys didn't make it much further then.
No, we probably 2-3 miles. Your mother was serious. She was going to jump out the door. She needed out of that car.
Oh, seeing her do a little tuck and roll off the interstate, that'd be quite hilarious.
We had a lot of memorable trips up there. I remember one time, we're driving up there, get in Indianapolis, and we get past there. She said, you want me to drive? I said, yeah. And we were going to go. It was for my dad's funeral. And we were going to go. It was December. And I don't know where we spent the night. I think it was in maybe near Louisville, Kentucky, or maybe near Nashville. So we could make it the rest of the way the next day. And it started snowing in North Indianapolis. And it's your mother's driving. She's driving my pickup. And there's an accident. They had a detour. We're driving down the road and taking the detour off these old roads and there's bridges. I'm telling your mother, don't get too close to the car in front. When you go across the bridge, don't hit the brakes. Don't hit the gas. And she goes, stop telling me things. I'm driving in whiteout conditions. She said, we got to where she could pull over. And she said, you drive. I drove. And several hours later, we're up in very northern Michigan. And around Grayling and Gaylord, people may know where that's at. It's up in the snow belt. Probably 5-6 inches of snow had fallen. It's all on the road, on the interstate. And you now live in Wisconsin, so you'll know this. One part of a 4-lane highway, the passing lane, usually has snow in it. And the other has just 2 tracks that you follow. And I look in the mirror, and here comes this truck. I can see a truck coming up. And I looked over at your mother, and I said, you want to see what a whiteout condition looks like? She goes, why? And I mean, snow was just coming down. I said, because you're fixing to see it in a minute. Mm. And that truck went by. we couldn't see any. I said, that's whiteout conditions.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure she appreciated it.
Yeah, I bet not. I'm sure it felt like whiteout conditions the first time when she was seeing that. But coming from Alabama, we don't have any experience driving in the in the snow.
We've got some ice down here a couple of times. And she'll fool you. She'll put on all her clothes she owns and go out inside and play with the dogs in it and take pictures. And she'll send them to me if I'm wherever I'm at work or whatever, because I'll I'll brave the conditions and drive on the ice. But she sent me pictures of things. I was like, you've been outside all day? She goes, yeah, I put on this. That's about every article of clothing she owns.
Yeah, she goes out Michelin man style. And
pretty much.
She can handle it.
Yeah, man. For a few minutes. Yeah.
So do you think you'll ever end up making it back to Jones Camp then? Or
I hope to.
Is it still in the family?
Yeah, I think Charlie Jones's son-in-laws hunt out of it.
His son's son-in-laws?
Yeah. So Peter Bush, it was his stepson. He had some daughters. He had a son too, but I don't think his son hunted much. But his son-in-laws do.
Okay.
And I think they are keeping the tradition going. Now, I know of them. I just don't really know them.
Sure.
They come along well after I had left. And, they're still hunting out of it. In fact, I spoke with Peter Bush not long ago, and he, and another one of my dad's friends, Gary Bennett, and they're getting a little older, but they're both in good spirits, but neither one of them can hunt anymore.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you get to that age where we just can't do it.
Yeah.
And going to camp is, now Peter will still go back out to camp.
Yeah.
He doesn't see as well as he used to, but he'll sit around the camp like my dad used to. He had arthritis bad. He'd say, I'm going to sit at the camp and hunt from the table.
Now, would he actually hunt from the table?
My dad? No. Never. He would simply drink coffee and maybe make lunch or something. So he never would hunt. He'd walk back there. I had him a nice little stand, and everywhere I went, I would make him a comfortable place to sit.
Yeah.
If he chose to go, but he just went less and less.
Mm.
And when he was down here, we took him, and of course we did a dog hunt that one year at your mother's uncle's place.
Yeah.
It was good to have him. He did a good job of introducing me to the outdoors, and so we fast forward down to Alabama, and I lived here for a couple of years. We didn't hunt, and then I went home, and I think it was my mother's funeral. And my dad said, "Do you want to take a couple of the guns down there in case you hunt?" I said, "Yeah, maybe." I said, "They have hunting." I said, "I don't know where they hunt at, but they have hunting." But I had to research it. I didn't know where to go, and so we were at a family event, and I spoke with your uncle, and he said, "We have a hunting camp here," and we didn't talk about joining it then. There's public land. Not public, but it's kind of wildlife preserve land.
And that's my Uncle Norman.
That's your Uncle Norman.
Yep. Yeah. We hunted with.
And so you and I started the first year. I took the rifle and took you, and it was bitter cold, and I had an old truck with a broken window, if you remember.
I do remember. So, all right. So today is April 1st. It was warm today. Right.
Yeah, I've got a sweatshirt and pajama bottoms on. So
now, but it's evening. So, but we're talking. What's normal? So we went the first time in November, December, probably December.
I think it was December. I think it was the week between Christmas, because they had a week off. They had a week hunt, if you remember.
Yep.
Always. And I think it was the week between Christmas and New Year's.
Yep. So what they do here at the WMA, that was down the road from us, is they would have. So rifle season would be open from November 20th or so through January 31st. But just because rifle season was open didn't mean that you could hunt with a rifle anytime you wanted on the management area. They had specific hunts where you had to go and you'd have 2 days or 4 days or whatever.
Or one day.
Yeah. And you'd have to go to the place, to the little ranger shack there. You'd have to check in the morning, give them your hunting license, sign in for the day. Then you were free to go roam on this place.
That's right.
And we're talking late December, probably bitter cold. Now, what's bitter cold for Alabama? Because I think back, first of all, we had garbage clothing. Not garbage clothing. We did not have clothing to stay warm in.
No, if you remember, we did that hunt because I had my northern clothes.
Yeah, well, you
the first year
you had your northern clothes. I remember wearing wind pants underneath jeans, and as I walked, it would go. And you were like, "Can you be any quieter?" And I'm like, "No, I can't. I have literal wind pants. I'm MC Hammer out here with these pants on. I can't be any quieter. I'm literally wrapped in plastic right now." But
you know, it's really funny.
What's that?
Is you tell me these things and you remember them vividly. I have no recollection.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff I have no recollection of either. But so, all right. So it's we say bitter cold though. What do you mean bitter cold?
In this particular case, people were making icicles with their water taps and on purpose, and the ice never melted for the whole week. So yeah. It's in the 20s. I think it was, if I remember right, it might have been 19. Now, this is what I hunted in the north, but down in the south, 19 is cold.
Very.
But what makes it a little bit colder than when you're at is the humidity is still here.
Yep.
Yep. And so for the people that are in Wisconsin, and you will remember, Josh, when you hit March, now January is cold, February is really cold.
Yep.
That's when you're going to get below zero. March, you get a couple storms a year. This is what I remember as a kid. Some of the coldest nights I can recall were in March because it was only 30-some degrees, but it was bone-chilling because it was so humid.
Yep.
It would be a bad storm. It would be wet snow. You get stuck, and you'd have to shovel out, and you'd be like, why am I so cold? It's only 31 degrees. It should be warm, but you're frigid to the bone.
Yep.
That's what it's like down here.
Yep. Give me a November morning that's 15 degrees over in Wisconsin over a December morning that's 40. Yeah. Here in Alabama,
yeah.
Just because it's wet and cold and
absolutely
horrible.
Yeah. So when it was 19, it was dry for Alabama, but it was still humid.
Yep.
And it was pretty bone chilling. And we hunted there and never saw a thing.
Now, we had an interesting hunt. That's the one where we did a lot of walking. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of busting brush. Now, looking back, we were hunting in probably some of the better areas that we could have been hunting in.
Yeah.
I mean, we hunted some thick cutovers on the edge of tall pines. So we were hunting edges. We didn't even know we should be hunting edges, but we were hunting the edges. I remember at one point we were sitting in a spot. You told me to sit down in this little opening, mm-hmm. and you went walking and something ran through.
Yep.
And we thought it was a dog. Turned out to be a deer.
Yeah.
Because you weren't quite associated with the size of the animals down here.
They can be small.
They can be very small. And by very small, we're talking that deer was probably 40 pounds.
Yeah.
45 pounds.
It was a young deer. It was probably 40 pounds. It was a young deer.
Very, very small.
Without its mama. It was probably without spots and without its mama.
Yeah. So real tiny deer. We hunted hard. We didn't see anything. We saw some turkeys. Yeah. I do remember that. And now, so we sat on, we saw a lot of turkeys, actually. I think
a
big group of turkeys came out, actually. We were sitting on a food plot that evening. And I remember back behind us, I thought I heard the sound of antlers rocking together and a buck rubbing his antlers on a tree. Do you remember that at all? Or is that something?
Not.
Okay. All right.
But I also don't hear as well as you. But I'm sure you told me about it.
Sure. I just, as a kid, you know, trying to piece all of that back together. And I think at this time I think I was 13 that year.
You were. Yeah.
I was 13. So I'm trying to piece all this together. I have no clue what's going on. But I remember vividly, we were in this area of timber. It's a little more open. Mm-hmm. And there was a small pine tree on like a little knoll kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the knoll is from, but there was a small pine tree there and a buck had rubbed that pine tree.
Yeah.
And I remember losing my freaking mind on the inside.
And we sat on some scrape line there.
Yep.
If you remember.
Right in that same area. And I remember just being like, oh my gosh, a deer was in here and rubbed his antlers on this tree.
That's right.
Like man, that like rocked me. I was like, this is living.
Yep.
You know?
And so we hunted that week, and that was the only week I hunted.
For the whole year.
Yeah, Miss Helen is happy that I didn't take up too much deer hunting back then. Your mama, Miss Helen. And she was probably pretty happy about it because she hadn't been happy since.
And, we changed things pretty quick.
Yeah. So I asked you, did you want to go hunting? And you said, sure. So we bought you a 30-30 Marlin. That's why I started off with. And the next year, we hunted Youth Hunt. I think we saw some deer on Youth Hunt. We bought more Alabama-style clothes where they were netted and camouflage, but they're still crap clothing.
Yeah, it wasn't going to be warm by any stretch. But so we saw those two deer on the Youth Hunt. Yeah. That was on that food plot.
Man, they were the smallest deer I've ever seen in my life.
They were the smallest deer. I mean, they walked out, and they were tiny. And yeah. I think you heard they walked out.
We heard them walking to us.
We heard them walking. They were coming up behind us. Yep. And my heart was about to beat out of my chest. Yep. And you must have heard me pull that hammer back.
I did, because I told you don't shoot.
That's right. I was sitting there, and I pulled the hammer back. As soon as it went click, you said, don't shoot. And they were looking, and I was like, oh, gosh. But they were tiny. Yep. They were teeny tiny. And those deer were a little weird looking.
They were very weird looking. I was like, this deer do not look right. They were shaggy.
They were shaggy looking, and they were extremely, and I've seen other deer called melanistic deer, mm-hmm. which are basically black. And that's kind of how these deer were. They were extremely dark colored.
Yeah.
Very, very, yeah. I've never seen another deer this dark in my life.
No.
And they were shaggy looking.
And I was thinking that's what Alabama deer look like.
Yeah.
Man, they're small.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. So I don't know if these were two melanistic fawns or what. But anyway, so
thinking back, they're very cute though, weren't they?
They were. Really? Yeah, they're very cute.
We saw them 15, 20 yards.
Oh my gosh!
No cover.
Yeah, no cover. We're sitting in lawn chairs.
Yeah.
And they're eye to eye. These are the first deer that I've ever had walk up on me while hunting. I got a 30-30 lever action in my lap, and I'm like, I'm about to blast one of these suckers.
No.
And it didn't happen.
No.
No.
And we didn't see any deer the rest of that season. We hunted the management area only. And towards the end of the season, which is the rut for Alabama, the beginning of the rut, Josh, you explained that it was to January 31st. They've extended the season 10 days to February 10 because the rut is so late.
Yep. It was only getting started. Yeah. That last weekend or last week of the season,
that's right,
was you were just starting to see some chasing.
And you see back at the back of the property here where you'll see some scrapes from time to time.
Oh, I was out turkey hunting this morning. I saw scrapes out there. There's one just across the fence that is just outside of those pine trees, and it's clearly been worked.
There are some very, very, very late rutting going on right now. I think it's getting later every year.
Yeah. We've noticed that every year, a little bit later rutting activity the last bit.
But I pulled you out of school. You're complaining that you were sick, but you weren't about to stop hunting.
I was sick as a dog.
Well, you were. I don't know how sick you were, but.
I was sick as a dog, but you pulled me out of school early. We had one last crack at it. It was January 30th. So it was the day before the last day of the season.
That's right.
You pulled me out. We made the drive out to the management area.
Yeah.
Stopped at Hardee's on the way.
Did we?
We stopped at Hardee's.
You've got a good memory.
Well, I had to get something because my throat.
That's right.
I thought my throat felt like it was closing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to drink something, have something cold on it, something, because I'm not doing okay. Yeah. So we run through the Hardee's, and then we went to a food plot that we had found a couple weeks before, before.
Yeah, we went scouting and found it and said, this would be a good spot to sit.
It had a good trail coming into it from some pine trees.
Yep.
And we thought this would be a good place to sit. And we got there, and there was, we thought, okay, well, this is great. We get out, we're spraying down with scent-free spray.
Yeah.
As if that was going to do anything with the stench that I was carrying around on all the clothing I had on. But anyway, and a guy comes walking up to us.
Right through where the field is.
Literally walking from the field.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my gravy, what is this man doing in our area?
Yeah.
was like, well,
there's not a truck to be seen. The etiquette is if you see another truck, you keep on going.
That's right.
There's not a truck to be seen.
Don't know where he came from. He just walked and go ahead and tell.
I don't remember what the guy said other than, are y'all hunting in here?
No, he did. He asked if we were hunting. And I said, yeah, we plan to hunt that field right there. And he said, that's good. I saw a 7-point. He said, maybe you get on him. And I was like, well, good. You know, he went back where he came from, and I looked up, and the man had disappeared.
Yeah, well, and here's the creepy part. Now, I'm not real hocus pocus.
I'm not at all.
But we're watching. We're getting out by this field. There's the road that goes down past the field. You can't drive the road, though. It's a closed road,
right?
So the road goes down to the field. We're parked outside where the road turns off, but we can kind of see the very edge of that field. There ain't nobody there. We look up, and there's a man coming.
Yep.
Old fella. In camouflage that looks like had been left out in the sun.
Yeah.
It was practically white.
Yeah.
Camouflage. Faded.
Yep.
The guy comes up, tells us he had been tracking a deer.
Is that what he said?
He said, I saw it on the other road on the other side. Now, the other road was how far away?
I have no idea.
Long ways. Yeah. Not long close. Way. He said, I'd been tracking him, and I tracked him down into a swamp. And I'm like, dude, how in the world are you tracking deer through the pine woods of Alabama? You ain't tracking nothing. I tracked this deer, and he went down in there. Maybe you'll get him. And the guy was just jovial about it.
Yeah.
He was happy we were out there.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, go get him.
Yeah.
And
Maybe you'll see him,
yeah. And I turn around and look at you. We kind of exchange looks because it's just a weird, bizarre scenario. Because the guy's like out of a Hallmark movie or something.
Yeah, nice old fella.
And we look back up. He turns to walk back down the road, and we could see that road for 150 yards. I'd say 100 yards.
75.
Okay, when I was 14 or whatever, it felt like 200. But you can see a long way down the road.
Yeah.
We exchange a look. Like, wasn't that weird?
He wasn't too far off, and we exchanged a look.
And then we looked back up, and he's gone.
He was gone.
Like, gone.
Gone. Because I looked at you and said, where'd he go?
And we said, I have no idea. No idea.
Mystery.
Yeah. So anyway.
We pull lawn chairs out.
We pull out our lawn chairs again.
And if you remember, the field was a dog leg.
Yep.
And I set you in one spot where the big trail was coming in.
Yep, where the big trail was coming in, because it was coming in to, if you're facing the field, from the left-hand side.
That's right.
And there's a big brush pile in the middle of the field.
Two big oak trees.
Yep, and you got on the far side of that, where you could see the other side of the field.
The other side. And I set you up where the big trail was, figured they'd come from your left to right.
Yep, and it's January 30th, and it's 70-something degrees.
Oh, it was warm.
It was hot.
We had these mosquito netted clothing.
Yep. And it's sweltering.
Yeah. When it's warm in January, it's warm in January.
Yeah. Muggy.
And I put you in a chair, I got you behind a little tree, some brush. And I said, I'm going to go up there. I said, now listen, I said, I'm just going to watch that field. If they don't come to you, I might would shoot, but I wasn't intending to shoot. And so I went up on the dog leg, found a little spot, put my chair, sat down, and went to sleep.
You were out.
It was hot.
Oh, man. And
I went
yeah.
to sleep.
It was warm.
And I look up when I woke up, and I'm bleary-eyed. I look up, and I said, that sure does look like a deer standing right in front of me. I look, and it started to move. I said, oh, that is a deer. And it was an Alabama deer, but it was bigger. And it was a buck. It was, I think if I remember right, a 7-point, wasn't it?
Six.
6-point.
Yep.
And it walked, and it started walking across that field. And I watched it walk. It's walking towards you. And it got to the close to the oak trees, and I put the scope on it, looked at it. And I said, Josh, my boy, you need to shoot this deer. I hope you're not sleeping. And I watched that deer, and it got past those oak trees. I was like, I don't have a whole lot. He ought to be in front of you by now. I hope you're not asleep, Joshua. And he had about three or four more steps before he's going to be out of my range, and I couldn't shoot him. And I was going to have to pull the trigger because I knew he was in front of you.
Well, and in Alabama, this is not a buck you're letting walk. Like, not
this
on,
is not a buck you walk, especially on management area.
Not on this management area. I'll get to what some folks said about it earlier, but
South Alabama.
Yeah,
South Alabama is different than the Black Belt of Alabama.
Yeah, we're in the coastal plain region of Alabama. The soil is sand.
Sand. When I plant my fields here, it's sand.
Yep.
Everywhere except one field, it's clay.
Yeah.
But, next thing I knew, I hear kapow, and that deer dropped right there in its tracks.
Yep. Yep.
Joshua, my boy,
did good. That's what all I heard. I remember hearing, good shot, Josh, from down the field a bit. And I hadn't fallen asleep. I was in it to win it this afternoon. This is just one of those afternoons that you feel it and you're kind of just, you're on it, you know, just everything in you is filled with anticipation. And I didn't really know much of anything about rut or whatever at that time point, but I did know it was my last time to hunt for the year. And I did know I'd been feeling like garbage. And I did know creepy ghost man had just come down and told me I was probably going to get that deer. Yeah, and so
that's still creepy.
And I didn't know what was going on with that, but, I'm sitting there, you know, just watching the animals and I see antlers poking out from around that bush. You know, you could see the little clump of stuff and I see it. And I lost it on the inside. I mean, I'm swearing at myself is what I'm doing actually. I'm cussing the whole time, like, oh, you know, don't mess this up kind of thing. And got the gun up and I remember he had taken, I think I could see about three quarters of his body. I don't think I could see his butt when I shot him. And hit him in the neck.
Yeah.
Dropped him right there.
Right there.
And he was a nice deer. He's a nicer deer. He probably weighed 100 and, to give people perspective, live on the hoof, probably weighed 135 pounds.
Yeah, probably.
130 pounds,
maybe,
something
maybe
like that.
Maybe 140.
Yeah. So, but for where we're at, really nice deer. Yeah. So much so, I remember we took him to the check-in station because we had to check the deer in. Yeah. And we had guys leaning over the truck bed like,
wow.
I've been hunting out here for years. I ain't never killed anything like
this. That's right.
We've never seen a deer like this. We've never killed a deer like this.
That's right.
And we're talking a 6-point that I think scored right at 70 inches.
That's right. That's right.
So he's not a monster.
No.
About 12 inches inside spread, 11 inches inside spread, something like that, maybe less.
But on a management area that South Alabama, that was a good deer.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So that season I don't think could have gone more perfectly to get me hooked on hunting.
And then you had mono.
Yeah, so I went to the doctor, I guess it was the next day, was it? I went to the doctor the next day. It turns out I had mono. Yeah. And the doctor was like, you've let this go for way too long. You need to stop. By the way, you need to not do any heavy lifting for a while because your spleen might explode from what you've let happen to your body. But I knew though that at the end of that week I was getting to go hunting.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to miss out. You know, this had been a season long ordeal at this point because we hunted youth season, and I think we hunted basically every rifle opportunity that they had at this management area for the year. So we'd hunted quite a few. I mean, we hunted hard when we went.
We did.
We were out there before daylight. We'd come back to the truck, eat a lunch, take a nap, go back out, and hunt until dark. And not necessarily easy hunting either. We weren't driving four-wheelers to the spot. I mean, we're parking at gates and walking, you know. And
long
so,
walks.
Yep, very scouting, long walks.
Everything.
Yep, watching for people, you know, having to dodge people, having to find plan A, B, C, D, E, and F.
That's right.
Because we'd, you know, let's run and grab a sandwich at Subway or whatever. Yeah. And you come back and that spot's taken. Well, crap, let's go some. Now that spot's taken. Yeah. You know, so we had hunted hard all year. And then to find that success through adversity, through weird circumstances on the very, oh, and I got to mention this too, that deer was wet.
Was it?
That deer was, the deer's body was wet. So he had gone down into a swamp.
Yeah.
And so whatever in the world that guy was or was doing.
I have no idea. I still think of that sometimes.
See, he, that deer went down in the swamp. He's going to come out in this field. Okay, yeah. Man, whatever.
Yeah,
that's right. And he sure did. So anyway, but that season, the way it had happened, I think happened in such a way that, I mean, it was perfect for me to get hooked on it.
Yeah.
You know, to spend the whole year, because we didn't see another deer after youth season.
No, we didn't.
I mean, did not see another deer.
It was tough hunting.
Very tough hunting.
We sat on some nice fields, too. It was amazing we didn't see any deer.
We did. They act, you know, to their credit, at that old Boykin management area before they closed it down, they had some really nice food plots.
They did.
Really large food plots. I remember we sat on that big one. How many acres was that?
That was good. Might have been a 10-acre field.
I was going to say, yeah. I think it must have been 10 acres. And they had corn planted in it and had left the corn stubble on one side and green patch on the other. And you, not
how
a deer.
How we didn't see a deer that evening, I don't know.
Not a deer came out into it.
That was crazy.
Yeah. So, but then we got that one on the day before, last day of the season. Last day we were going to be hunting, I believe. Right. Man, I was hooked after that.
I took it off work. I said, this will be the last chance.
Yeah.
I want to pull you out of school.
Yeah. And then I got weird after that when it comes to hunting.
You did.
We both jumped all in.
Yeah, we were all in. And the next year, you know, we went to a family get-together. Your uncle helped get that deer skinned out.
Yeah, helped us clean it. He stuck a chunk of the brain into my mouth.
Yeah, that was good with mono.
Wonderful. Yep. I hope he got mono from that. No.
Your Uncle Norman was a good fellow.
He was.
And he had a little club, and we joined it the next year, built a couple shooting houses for it, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And we hunted there. You saw some deer. I didn't see one or two. Never shot a deer. That's where my dad hunted with us.
Yep. And then, we tried waiting on bucks. I saw does several times. We tried waiting on bucks out there, but never did see a buck.
And the next year, then we joined what is traditional Alabama hunting club, and a good one. And we stayed in it a number of years.
And that is all for this week's episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in next week for part 2 of this conversation with my dad. And until then, do something to get outside and take advantage of all the awesome opportunities that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.